Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, the podcast that gathers high-level tactics by talking to your favorite Pro Tour Magic players. Whether you're just beyond starter decks or a hardcore grinder, we'll draw strategies you can use today to build stronger decks with killer results. Play like a pro here at MTG Pro Tutor. Now, welcome the man with an unbeatable force of will, your thought courier and demonic tutor, Sean Penrod.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. I am super excited for all the stuff we have going on in Magic right now. Last weekend, we had two Grand Prix where Battle for Zendikar really came out of its limited shell. We really got to see what the pros all over the world are doing with Battle for Zendikar in limited. And today is the start of Pro Tour Battle for Zendikar. And I couldn't be more excited to really see what the pros do with Battle for Zendikar in Constructed. I want to see what comes out of this amazing weekend of all the best players playing Battle for Zendikar. So keep your eyes glued to that this weekend, and I will definitely be following up with everybody who makes top 16 to get them on the show and hear their insights and figure out what they know so that we can get better. One of the cool things about the Magic community is that it is worldwide. And today, we have a special treat because we get to talk to somebody from the beautiful country of Italia. That's right, we have an Italian pro player on today. And what I got out of this interview were some really good mulligan tips. So definitely stick around. With that, let's dive right in. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to bring you our featured guest today. Our guest is a cultured Italian man who has made the top 16 in one Grand Prix. He also has one Pro Tour top 8 and another Pro Tour top 16. Ladies and gentlemen, Andrea Mengucci. Andrea, how are you doing today?
Hello, I'm feeling great. Thank you.
Awesome. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with our audience tips to take their game to the next level?
Yes, I am.
Great. So, Andrea, I've shared a little bit about you, but why don't you fill in the gaps from the intro and then tell us about you personally?
Okay, well, as you said, I live in Italy, in a very small town, like in the center of Italy, on the sea. I really live on the beach, so for summer, I'm feeling great. I always go to the beach and etc. But like for living, I study law in a like bigger town around, and I used to play Magic. So that's pretty much it. I'm kind of young. I will be 21st in a few months. And yeah, live with my parents, have a girlfriend, you know, living the student life in Italy.
There you go. That's awesome. Young, life ahead of you, all this fun stuff going on. That's great. So currently you are studying law, you said?
Yeah, I'm studying law. I will be starting like in a few weeks, the fourth year. And in Italy, you have 5 years, and then you have to do like an exam and something like that. It's a bit longer path than in other countries, but I'll get there.
That is really cool. Now, I'm always interested with the connection between, you know, the professional life and Magic or things like that. Have you seen any carryover between your study of law and Magic, or from Magic to what you do as a student?
Yeah, of course, I don't have the greatest mark of every student of law. And of course, I don't like study as much as other people study it. But yeah, I think before an exam, I get a lot into it. But before the Pro Tour or before like a Grand Prix, I used to test a lot that as well. So I try to balance these two like exams, one of which is the Pro Tour and the other, which is the, you know, the test at the university.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I like that. So, Andrea, you've had an amazing journey thus far playing Magic. And what's great about this show is we're going to use stories to close the gap between where you are and where our listeners are. So we want to hear stories from your early days in Magic. So I'll ask you a couple quick questions and then let you tell a story. First off, when did you start playing Magic? What set?
The set is the beach. As I said, I live in Senigallia, which is a very small city, and I live on the beach. So we used to play there. We used to play there football. We used to play there beach tennis, beach volley, and something like that. But you can't always play like sports and etc. So you used to play cards, and we started with Magic. I think my first deck I had was like a mono white with Sarah Angel and other random angel. Some other friends of like a green deck with some worms and something like that, you know, as you start as a child.
Right.
But then, yeah, I liked the game. And in 2009, I won my first PTQ. It was a 16. And then, yeah, I started play one Pro Tour, and then I liked the game, and et cetera, and until Atlanta, for through Atlanta, journey to Knicks. Well, I eventually top 8 in a kind of, you know, funny way. Go, I think after I tell you all the story, because yeah, it's a great story about that Pro Tour. And then since then, with the King of the Hill, you know, all the stories, starting writing for Channel Fireball, having great team and having more success with Magic.
That's awesome. And when you started playing, what year was that? What were some of the newer cards?
Yeah, I think the first booster pack I opened was the Champion of Kamigawa.
Okay, very cool.
And I opened, I remember to open, I don't know if it's Champion or something like that, but it's Kamigawa. I remember to open Izamaru that I instant put in my white deck.
Nice.
It's 2-2 for one, you know, great.
And what's been your favorite set since then?
The best draft set to me was Innistrad. You know, there was a lot of different archetypes. I really love that format. I was always on the green-white travel preparation, but you can also do the like green-black flashback, the auto mill, or the red strategy were great as well. Yeah, I really love the draft format, and I also won a PTQ with that. So
nice.
I really love that.
Very cool. And then what's one of your favorite cards of all time?
I guess my favorite card of all time is Bloodbraid Elf. In 2013, I remember doing like very well with Jandi in every format. So there was three tournaments in a row that I attended. There was a PTQ Modern that I won with Bloodbraid Elf and Deathrite Shaman. You know, there was a pretty nice deck, I guess. And then there was like a Grand Prix Verona in standard, and once again I played Jund, but you know, kind of different Bonfire, Thragtusk, or something like that. And then it was a Grand Prix Legacy, and I tried to attend again without playing very much Legacy at the time, playing Jund with Bloodbraid Elf and top 16. So you know, like in 2 months in a row, I like put up three good results with Jund and always with Bloodbraid Elf, and that became my best card.
That's awesome. And for those who don't know, what is that card? What does it do?
Bloodbraid Elf is a 4-mana 3/2 haste that has Cascade. Cascade is a great ability that lets you like reveal the top card of your deck until you find a card that costs less than 4, so like 3, 2, or 1. And in my deck, you have also always a great spell like Liliana of the Veil, like Thermogoyf, like, I don't know, in Legacy, Hem to Turak. So you do a lot of card advantage and put pressure on your opponent.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. That sounds really cool. So what makes Magic fun for you? Why do you keep playing?
I think that Magic is just a great game. I think it's the best game, card game. The beautiful things of the game is that it's so changeling. You have always changing format, like standard is always in develop, or limited is always different. And so those are the two formats that are like, you know, the main format for the competitive level of Magic. And it's great to keep reading, following, you know, the standard until like, for example, this standard until from Pro Tour, like Honolulu in last September, from here until here, it was so different, even though the cards were almost the same. Hmm. And you enjoy so much, like following this flow and changing your deck and learning always more and more, even though like a mini card game can be like more, you know, the same. You just get better.
Instead, awesome.
Here, you get better by changing your mind.
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool. So tell us a story of an early Magic-related challenge you struggled with and how you overcame it.
So what everyone like was blaming at me that was very lucky is that I keep like a lot of hands. Like I keep like one lander or something like that, okay? And there was a mistake in my when I was younger that, you know, you open your hand, you have like two lands and a couple of high drop and you keep because, you know, you have good spell, but you can't cast them. So there was a mistake and I was keep doing that. And like many times I say, okay, I won, so I'm right, but that's just wrong. So, you know, getting better at this game, I learned like how to mulligan more and to understand the value of the hand, not just by the cards or the lands, but just overall.
Now, that's something that I struggle with a lot as well, and I know many of our listeners do too. So what did you do to get better at mulliganing? Did you just have people point it out to you, or what was that process like?
Okay, so that's very different between standard and limited. And also, we might introduce the new rule with the Vancouver Mulligan. That's a little bit, you know, different now.
Right.
So in limited, the base reason to mulliganing just to evaluating your hand and your deck. In constructed, the matchup is really matters.
Okay.
So that's the first thing to understand. So in limited, if you open a three lander and four spell, you used to keep. If you have like the lands of your two colors, and you have even though if you don't have like a two drop, or even if you don't have any creature but just have a couple removal spell, you keep, because in limited it's important to hit land drops, and then eventually you will draw spells or lands. Instead, in constructed, that's different, because if you like, let's say with Abzanagro, that's the deck that I love, that played a lot recently.
Right.
You open a hand with four lands and like three removal spell, no creature. You cannot keep that, because the aim of your deck is to play like a 2, 3, and 4 drop. So you need to mulligan into like a hand with like at least 2 or 3 lands and at least like 1 or 2 creature.
Right. Okay.
And that's different. Like in limited, you can keep a hand with no creature, as I said, if it has like removal spell or, I don't know, draw spells, counter, you know, something like that. But in constructed, it's different. Also, the matchup, like let's say for modern, where there are decks that are very different each other, you can't keep a hand with no like disruption if you're playing Jund against, let's say, Amulet combo. Okay, that's just an example. You need to evaluate a lot of different things and not just look your lands and spell. If you have like 2 lands or 3 lands, you keep.
That's good. Yeah, I like that distinction, how the matchup makes a difference in constructed. That's cool. So is there a time that you had a level up moment, a breakthrough or an epiphany that really changed how you play or see the game?
I think that was it like the second Pro Tour I qualified for, I started to test with Samuele Stratti. Well, I don't know if you guys know this guy. He won a Pro Tour in Philadelphia back in 2011. But not only that, Samuele Stratti is like, to me and to a lot of people here, is the best Italian player of all time. Now he just stopped playing. But for me, he helped me a lot, because I was like playing against him, and I was just learning so much. I was playing next to him, and I was learning so much. So like, he gave me a lot of knowledge, and that probably is my breakthrough point.
Dang, that's awesome. So finding someone who was at the level above you and being able to play with them really kind of helped you break through.
Yeah, now you can... let's say this. For my first PTQ I won, it was limited, and I didn't open a single booster of that format. I was just watching the video on Channel Fireball, like from David Ochoa and Conley Woods. And I remember that I was just following their advice. So like, they didn't know me at all, but I was just watching their videos, and I was learning so much that this gave me enough to win a PTQ. In limited, without like doing nothing, just watching them. That's basically another thing like this, that you learn a lot by other people. That's very important if you want to improve in Magic, not just playing, but just learning, reading, watching other better player doing that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool. I like that a lot. And now the next story we want to hear is your proudest Magic moment to date.
My proudest moment, I think if you're meaning, you know, it's quite difficult for me to understand the meaning of some words. Like, I know what proud means, but proudest moment means the moment of Magic that I'm most proud.
Exactly.
Like a top 8 of the Pro Tour.
There you go. Like, is that the one? So
okay.
Tell us the story of top 8ing of the Pro Tour. What was that like?
Okay. The top 8 of the Pro Tour came a little bit like... further, we can zig a little bit. So usually, people that are qualified for Pro Tour in Italy, they are just all together. Like, doesn't matter where you're from, if you're from the south or from the north, from Milan or from like Sicily. We used to test all together. We get a house, we get a hotel, and stay there, hang out, play. Okay. For Pro Tour Atlanta, I was like, I wanted to try something else. I want to try, I want to learn more English. I want to stay with Americans. So I knew this guy from for the previous Pro Tour. This guy, you might know him, is called Mike Sigrist.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so Max Sabres was this guy that played like next to me in Honolulu. We were the same hotel. We just hang around a little bit. Pro Tour Honolulu, I mean 2012, okay? And then we chat a little bit in the next few years. And for Pro Tour Atlanta 2014, that was the next Pro Tour I qualified for. I wrote to Mike and said, "Hey, Mike, how's going? Like, do you test for Atlanta?" And Mike was not a famous player at that time. It was just a good player, but not the level that you know him right now.
Right.
So I know Mike, and I say, "Well, do you test with some guys?" He say, "Yes, we have a couple of guys from Massachusetts qualified with PTQ, and yeah." And I said, "Can I stay with you? Can I like test, etc., with you?" He was like, "Yeah, it's a little bit strange, of course, but I'll ask them." And they went, "Okay, no problem. We are like a couple of guys, so you know, no big deal if a young Italian come with us." So well, I went to Atlanta and we start like doing our stuff. Like I brought a deck by myself,
right.
And I was just playing it, you know, as the people that are not many much professional do. Okay, so yeah. Now at the Pro Tour team, I always like test a lot and not bring my deck, my pet deck, and play that at the Pro Tour. But for that Pro Tour, I did that. And also, like, I watch a lot of draft. I haven't done any draft in real for that tournament. I was just watching the Mike and Devon, another guy, playing there. And yeah, and at the point, at the Pro Tour, I 6-0 in limited and top 8. So it was incredible how the star, and now Mike is the player of the year.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's insane because Mike wasn't even silver for that year, last year. And now just top 8 to Pro Tours and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That is really cool. Yeah. Now, I like how you said, so you brought your own, so like your own brew or whatever, and you're saying now you don't do that?
No, because now you play the deck that you think is the best,
okay,
and play against the other one. But if you see that you're losing, you change your mind. But for Atlanta and for the other Pro Tours I've been to, you know, sometimes it happens a lot to match a player. You play your deck, but you don't succeed, but you still think, well, I was unlucky. Maybe if I drew better, I could win that game. I know, I'm sure I was right, okay? And that's a mentality that you shouldn't have if you want to succeed, because you must be able to understand your weakness.
Yeah.
And yeah, for the Pro Tour, I just brought my deck and see how it goes. And it went great.
There you go. So now let's bring things to present time. What is your favorite format?
Let's say standard.
Okay.
I think standard is the best format because bring a lot of good result to the player that tests the most.
Oh, yeah. And so what would you say to a player who just started playing standard last week? What's the one thing a brand new standard player should focus on?
First, I think that you should wait until Battle for Zendikar, because it's a little bit cheaper. Because now the cards the standard will change. And that's the best thing about standard, that is keep changing. You need to follow every week of standard to understand the standard. You have to read. You have to read the deck list. You have to test the matchups. You have to understand what's the best deck for the current week, for the next week. That's what you should do with standard. So let's bring the example of Grand Prix London. I'm not sure if you guys followed how it went, but basically there was a Pro Tour Vancouver, mono red and blue red topters spiked. Grand Prix San Diego, green white spiked, okay? So I'm now have to attend Grand Prix London. I have to decide what to play. And yeah, I have to watch in the past weekend to understand how the metagame will develop.
Right.
And I decided that Abzan Agro with Youngerback was a great choice because it was beating the first deck, like mono red and the blue red topter, but was also a nice edge against the green white with Wing Metroc and Offense of the Foremost, you know, cards like that. So that's what I brought to Grand Prix London with my two teammates. Turns out that my two teammates top 8ed and I just fell a little bit short of top 8. Fabrizio Anteri won and etc. etc. So yeah, that's how you should look at the standard. And you know, in modern, that doesn't happen. You can't just look the past weekend and expect to see that many people will bring the deck the next tournament because it's so wide and there are so many pet decks in modern.
Right. That's really neat. And so how did you figure out that Abzan Agro is so well positioned? Just through playtesting?
Figure out? No, because the week before Grand Prix London, I was in Croatia with my girlfriend to a vacation, okay? So I couldn't play test there. I was just brainstorming every time I had a spare time and reading the checklist and what should I do? What should I do? What should I do to win? And et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I came up to Abzan Agro.
That's great. That's cool.
Yeah. And then I arrived in Italy like on Wednesday, and on Friday I had the flight. So I had 2 days that I played on Magical Line a lot and tuned the deck list from like four Wardens to Brimats to Herald of Torment to like the final deck list that Wing Metroc, which was insane and is still insane.
So is that what you're playing currently in Standard, is the Abzan Agro?
Yeah, on last weekend, I played in GP Prague and finished 21st, 12-3. So a nice result for me. And yeah, that's what I played. You can see everything about my deck and the sideboard plan, etc. on the channelfireball.com.
Awesome. Now, it sounds like you switch up your deck based on what's winning throughout the season. Is that right? Or do you recommend sticking to one deck?
No, in Standard... at all. In Standard, you cannot stick at one deck. That's another good thing of Standard, is that you need to change. Like, for example, I love mid-range strategies, okay? I love Abzan Control. But I figured out for Pro Tour Vancouver and and Grand Prix London that isn't a win strategy. So I need to change my game plan to an aggro deck that I'm not used to play a lot. Also, I love to play like control for Pottery Pontland. I played the blue-white control. I played blue-black control in the Grand Prix. But yeah, I figured that you cannot play blue-black control if Joel Larson won with mono-red and a lot of players did great with blue-red topters. So you need to change your deck if you're playing Standard.
Absolutely. Sweet. All right. So, Andrea, let's get down to some of the meat and potatoes. Our listeners, they want to improve their game. You know, they feel like if they lose, that they wasted the time and money that they spent playing. They could have gone do something else with their family or what have you. Of course, no one expects to win every time, but it's frustrating to feel like you play and you don't improve. So our listeners desperately want actionable advice. And you have played a ton of games. You've sat across the table from hundreds of opponents. And I want to ask you, what's the biggest mistake that you see other players making? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
Yeah, as I said, the first one is to mulligan hand that doesn't do nothing. But we already got over that. The second mistake is to choose the right deck for the metagame. And also, we already said that. The third mistake, so an advice, it's not a mistake, it's an advice to always look at your opponent, at what's he doing. So like sometimes you can get a little bit of edge there. Like so many players cast the card they drew. Let's say you have limited. You have two lands in play and two in hand, okay? You draw a land. You shouldn't play that land. You should just put into your hand, shuffle, and play a land. You don't have to give, small edges to your opponent. Or that's the same if they totsies you and you play another card that they don't know. Or if they... see your face like watching in the graveyard if they draw like a Snapcaster Mage or whatever. Mm-hmm. So looking at your opponent will give you a lot of what they do. Or for example, limited again, if they think a lot before combat, they probably as something like a combat trick. Like if when you attack and they block, you shouldn't instant being your creature. You should think a little bit, even if you don't have any tricks, just to let them think you have. And that's the same. If your opponent put instant being the creature that you block with, let's say you attack with a 3-3 and they block with a 3-3, okay, and you trade, but you shouldn't instant trade. You should just wait a little bit to give your opponent think a little bit more. Or with Abzan Anger Pack, it's the same with Dromacast Command. If you don't have in your hand, but there's a situation where you can play it, you should think, or with Abzan Charm, you know, there are tricks in Magic, and yeah, you should let your opponent think that you have, even if you don't. Or let's say another thing, attack with the mirror match, attack with Lion into their Anafenza or Siege Rhino. So Abzan Charm is a card, and you should always bluff that. They will never or very unlikely block you if you're attacking with 3 mana up into their creature. And if you don't, you just lose 3 damage. And that's important things to do. You know, small things matter a lot in Magic. Or I'm not sure if you saw Paul Rizzo against Martin Mueller at the World Championship.
I didn't see that one, but I did see him play a different match.
Yeah, so Paul Rizzo was great because he like mind tricked Martin Mueller. When Martin Mueller activated Tazigar, he was thinking a lot of what to get him back. And eventually, the choice was instant. He would have gotten back Totsis. But he was thinking a lot of it. And in the end, he gave him back Totsis. And so Martin Mueller was forced to play Totsis because he thought that Paul didn't want him to have because he wanted to cast. But Paul, a card that didn't want to play, just the 2 life loss would matter a lot, you know. So, you know, every small action matters, and you should be able to capitalize a lot of that.
That's awesome. Man, I'm sad I missed that match.
Yeah, you should watch it.
I really like Paul, and I saw the match that he lost and wasn't able to go on. I was like, oh, man, but I'll go back and watch that other one.
Yeah, it was the last, like, round 14, the winning match was insane.
Oh, got it. All right, Andrea, let's have a discussion about the lifetime of a set and get your insights on the various stages. So first comes the spoiler season, and everybody starts clamoring about which cards they think are good and whatnot. What do you do during the spoiler season? Do you look at all the cards? Do you wait till it's all done?
Yeah, I look always to each card spoiler and etc. Also, this morning I just wrote an article for Channel Fireball, so like that's also like my job. So I need to watch and write article about what I see.
Awesome! So you are an active participant in the spoiler season.
Yeah, I think I am. For example, this morning I wrote an article about the new standard mana base because you know Temple will rotate out. And the temples, and you have your new cycle of lands. You know the lands that came on top if you control 2 or more on top lands.
That's right.
And those are nice lands. Those are great lands if you have fetch land in your format. But for example, now you all in Battle for Zendikar you will have just 5 lands that you can fetch for the 5 fetch land in Council of Tarkir. But like you have a white green fetch land for a white green. Dual lands. You don't have like, for example, let's say in Abzan, you don't have a green black and black white land, double land. Okay.
Got it. So all the fetch lands, their colors match up with the new dual lands.
Yeah. So it's very difficult to build a mana base like for Abzan, let's say.
Got it.
Because because you cannot fetch like when the next set came out. You will be able to do that. Or like for Esper or Grixis, you can do that. You have 8 fetch lands to fetch your 8 dual lands. That's great.
Very cool.
So that will be very interesting building your next standard deck because the decks in standard are not only relied on cards and creature, but also on mana base.
Absolutely. Now, also, what do you look for? So during the spoiler season and you're looking at cards, what are you keeping your eye out for? How do you evaluate cards?
So the first thing that you do is to, you know, changing a little bit the deck that was existing before. Okay. And how will they, you know, like for example, the example is Hero's Downfall, rotate out. But then now we have a 3 mana sorcery removal spell for creature or planeswalker.
Ruinous Path.
Yeah, Ruinous Path. So yeah, now you can replace that very easily. And also, I don't know, like we have Ulamog. Ulamog is a great card for Tron in Modern. So you can replace your old Ulamog with the new Ulamog. That I think it's even better because you can play it on turn 4 with like 2 tower and the other 2 pieces. So you can now evaluate Ulamog that it's better in Tron than the old Ulamog or better than Ugin. You can evaluate that once like the Battle for Zendikar will go, like the standard will rotate. There's no more Heroes Downfall, but there is this other card. And then what? You can see, like, for now, you don't have many other information. You don't have, like, the clan like you did in last year, where you can understand that there will be an Abzan deck, a Jeskai deck, or something like that.
Right. So you're saying, for example, you'll take a deck that is good or popular or whatever, and you'll look at the pieces that are rotating out, and then you'll take a look and see what from the new set will be able to replace those pieces either directly, like Ruinous Path and Hero's Downfall, or close enough, and then kind of and then put the deck back together there, and then kind of see if there's other cards that will replace the existing slots, the other slots.
Yeah, that's basically the first step to do.
The first step, awesome.
Upgrading the deck, and then you start testing. And then the next thing to do is to, like, trying to, let's say, they will print, I don't know, because there are so few cards around yet, but let's do an example with the old standard. You had, like, Siege Rhino, okay? And you understand that there will be a great Abzan deck around. So you then try to build every standard Abzan deck that you can.
Right.
Like, with a... And they're like Lion and Afenza or something like that.
Got it. Very cool. All right, sweet. So we've evaluated the cards of the new set, and things are looking pretty good. However, we won't really know until we play with the cards. And for many people, the first time that they play with the cards is in a limited format. It's at a sealed pre-release, followed by a slew of booster drafts. So sealed is generally considered to be a slower, more bomb-centric format. When you go to a sealed event and you open up your pool, what are you looking for? What makes a good pool, and how do you put those six packs together in something that's competitive?
So for sealed, you used to see at your rares. You look at your rares, you have like, let's say, a great green rare, and you're likely to play green, mostly on the pre-release, because you want to try out your bombs, your rares. And then another thing that you can do at sealed is to try to like understand how the format goes. So, for example, if I have a low curve, like I have a 3-1 drop, 5-2 drop, and 3-3 drop, sorry, and 5-3 drop, probably the format is fast, and you wanna have a fast sealed pool, even if, you know, as you said, sealed is lower. But you know, that can happen. Or let's say you have like a ton of like elves. You have a ton of elves, and it was Magic Origins, and you want to see how elves play out. So for a sealed, like the pre-release, most likely it's not a tournament that I need to win. It's a tournament that I want to see how things goes. I want to try out stuff, and that's the first step to do with a new format, the pre-release.
Great, perfect. So drafting is considered to be skill intensive and is one of the most popular formats, and there are several aspects of the draft I'd like to hear your thoughts on. So first of all, when you are drafting, do you have any tips for remembering what you pass? Is that important, or what do you do when you're kind of passing cards?
So sometimes you just open your pack and there was a great rare or the great uncommon, and you are sure you're going to pick it, but you just don't pick and pass. You look at your pack and count the best card and see what can table. Or let's say you pick a rare red and you see two other red card. Okay, so let's say an example with Magic Origins. You open Chandra's Ignition, and you also see like Lightning Javelin and Fiery Impulse. Okay, and you're saying, okay, well, I take the Chandra's Ignition because it's the best card, and even if I pass those two red spells, I don't really care because I'm passing to the guy to my left. Okay, I'm just a common mistake is the spec is so full with red cards. I can't take a red card, okay? I hear this so many times.
Right.
But that's not actually true, because you're passing to the guy to your left. You just get one booster from them, okay? So even if the guy to your left is red, it's not really you that are... The things are not really going bad for you. They're going bad for him. And you are keep... Like, if even your person to the right is a red, things are going good for you. And that's the first thing that people, I always hear this, like in the pack that I already told you, Chandra's Ignition, Fiery Impulse, Lightning Javelin. You can say, no way, I'm not going to take this Chandra's Ignition. I'm going to take this, I don't know what, because red is, there are too many cards red in this pack. But that doesn't make any sense, okay?
Right.
You just need to take your cards, but when the pack came around, you have to, like, let's say there is also another, like, red card. You have to focus and see, hey, Lightning Javelin and Fiery Impulse were taken. So there are at least two other red players in the draft. But these other red cards, like, didn't table. So that means that there are only like two red players other than you at the draft. And you can understand that signal.
Ah, that's good.
And other than that, you know, like, as you say, when you draft, you get like a fourth pick Scab Goliath. And you understand that the people next to you are not that blue. Or something like that, just a Tower Geist, you know, some example of great cards that shouldn't be picked after, you know, pick 1, 2, or 3. And if they're out late, that means either that the boosters were great, but that shouldn't happen many times in Magic Origins because I think the power level isn't that the die. Or they just aren't in that color and you should be there.
That's awesome. That's really cool. I really like that kind of recognizing and keeping tabs of the colors and kind of trying to figure out how many people at the table are on that color. That's awesome. So how and when do you decide what colors to be in when drafting?
The best thing to do in draft to me is sticking with one color. So let's say, as I said, I took Chandra's Ignitions and then I took like 4 or 5 red cards. Even if like, let's say I pick a Goblin 2/1 that gives unblockable over like a better like a green card like the Ichiklo Recluse. Okay, that's just an example. I love the Ichiklo Recluse more, but if my first 4 pick were red, then I like to stick with red because I can read the signal better. So if you are like mono red in the first 5 or 6 pick, you can understand on the 7th pick what's going on. Like if you see a good black card. Okay, like, I don't know, the Shaman 3/1 that makes this card a card. You can understand that the 6 or 7 people before you, there aren't that many people in black, like 1, okay? Because otherwise, they would have taken that. And so you can read that as a signal and starting doing a little bit more black pick. Or if you are like 7th pick red after the 5th booster and you open a great, like, let's say, a green card in the 2nd booster, you are in time to switch. Otherwise, if you already wasted 4 or 5 pick in black at the 1st booster, then it can be too late to switch and you are already there and you need to pass that powerful rare that you opened.
Wow, that is really good. I've never heard anybody talk about it like that. So I like that. So you stay one color as much as you can. So what happens if on pack 2 or rather pick 2 or pick 3, you know, you took that first really good red card, but then there's like all the red is terrible. Like there's just really, really, really good stuff in another color, but you want to kind of do this whole, you know, stick with one color until, you know, later on in the pack. What do you do then?
Yeah, of course, you can't always do this. If you see that the red is cut because people next to you are red, you need to give up with your Chandra's Ignitions or whatever and need to read the signal better. Mm. Like if you see like a Claustrophobia 4th pick in a pack with no red cards, then you take it. Then if you see a pack with no blue or red card, then you take another color. I mean, in the first picks, you need to take the best card, but okay. It's better if that matches with the first card you take. And if you can stay with one color, that's the best thing to do.
I love that. I really like that. Stay with one color because then later on, like you said, you're more open to you're. It's easier to splash those bigger, you know, better cards that you find.
Or even it's easier to read the signal from the 2nd booster.
Right.
Because like if your opponent next to you opens like a Wirral Rogue and passes to you, this means that he's not blue. So you would like to go blue because you know that in the full. Second pack, you will have blue open to your left.
Right, right.
That's better to do.
That's awesome. I really like that. Thank you so much for sharing. So when it comes to building the mana base for your deck, we know that 17 lands is pretty much the right number. Sometimes you do 8 and very, very rarely, or you do 18 rather, and some very rarely you do 16. But so of those 17 lands, do you have any suggestions for making the right ratio? How do you construct your limited mana base?
So I'm a fan of 18 lands, honestly. Okay. Like, for example, in Dragons of Tarkir or Castle of Tarkir, I was always like going green with many morphs and many lands because you were needing lands to unmorph your like fully Loxodont or whatever. For Magic Origins, I think I drafted a lot of 17 lands because the curve is a little bit lower. Other than this, you need to evaluate 18 or 17 lands. What I think is, do I want to hit land drops until 5 or 6 turn? Like if I have, let's say, 3-5 drop and like 2-6 drop, that can happen if you have a green, okay? And I don't have any Leaf Glider, Nissa's Pilgrimage, you know, ramp lands, ramp spells, then you need to play 18 lands. But if you have at least one Leaf Glider, then I think 17 is fine.
And then how do you decide which lands, like how many lands of each color?
You need to look at your low drops. Let's say, as I said, if you have like Leaf Glitters and Elvish Visionary, okay, you understand that green is more important because you need this card not only to be played over your, like, let's say, a blue to drop, the zombie that mills two card. Okay, those are basically two drop. But Elvish Visionary, if I open a hand with three forest and Elvish Visionary, Elvish Visionary will get me, will help me digging through another land.
Right.
So it's better than if I open like three island and the zombie. That won't change anything. So that's just an example. Sometimes, like, for example, in cube draft, let's say, where you have like Sidlan Caryatid or like, I don't know, Rampangru, you need to prioritize green because with green, you will get to other colors.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. So now the pre-release is over. We've drafted the set a bit. And I normally see people go to Friday Night Magic, their local game store. They get, you know, start doing pretty well, and they want to go off and see what a GP is like or a PPTQ or something like that. So what is the best way, in your opinion, to prepare for these bigger events?
The best way to prepare to, you're meaning limited event or even constructed?
For, let's say, constructed.
Okay, so constructed, the best thing to do is playtesting. You need to know, like for standard, what's in your opponent deck. If you're playing against a Jeskai deck, you need to play around Jeskai Charm, Ojutai Command, Harbinger Tides, Dig Through Times, Magma Spry. You know, every card that you know that he's playing. So if he passes with 4 mana up, that doesn't mean that he doesn't have nothing to deploy. That means that he has Ojutai Command, and you're sure about that. Okay, there's 100%. Chance that's true. So if you have like Siege Rhino or Sorin, you should play Sorin, and that's an important thing to do, to know your opponent's deck list. Even of course not knowing in paper, but just knowing a little more of what they are playing. So this thing happens just with playtesting. If you play testing either with your friends or on Magic Online, that helps a lot.
Okay. And now for limited, how would you prepare for a bigger limited event?
So either Grand Prix or PPTQ are usually sealed, and then there's top 8 in the PPTQ or until this draft. So sometimes sealed is more important because with sealed, you will get to the draft. If you need to play testing, I think it's better to like do... if your plan is to play testing on Magic Online, even if it's more expensive, then you should do a sealed rather than two draft. Even if sealed and draft are kind of the same, you know, same Magic, it's a little bit different because you can play more high cost card. You are not usually play against team deck like Topters or Elves or team decks. So sealed is a little bit different. And since you're playing like in a Grand Prix, like I will be playing in Grand Prix Madrid in 2 weekends, and it's limited. And I'm for sure doing a couple of sealed on Magic Online. But of course, you need to attend also the booster drafts in your local store, because that's basically it. Those are the same cards. And also playing with real people is way better than playing online.
Very cool. Now, earlier you mentioned that you had a couple of buddies that that you play with, and it's kind of your team, things like that. Is that an official team? Do you currently have a team?
No, they're not my buddy, because where I live in the small town I told you, there's no local store.
Oh, there's okay. Basically
nobody that plays Magic. Okay, there's just a couple of people that play Legacy, and that's it. So every time I need to travel, like to reaching other friend, but they are in different town. So like for London, I hang out with people from Rome. For Prague, I hang out with people from like Cesena. It's another city around here. So you know, I reach them here, and then we travel together. But they are basically like people, my friend, but we're not a team.
Got it. So for Madrid, what are you going to, like, who are you going to
Yeah, for Madrid,
with?
I will have another, I will stay with other people.
Well, that's really good, because then you get different perspectives. You kind of learn a little bit from all kinds of different people. That's great.
For Madrid, I will be staying with Calcano, too. Calcano decided to fly all the way through Madrid to play the Grand Prix.
Awesome.
And he's a great friend of mine, because we always test together for the Pro Tours.
Great. Awesome. All right. So what tips do you have for playtesting? Like, when you are with teammates, things like that, how do you get the most out of your playtesting sessions?
Yeah, as I said, I only test with my teammates before the Pro Tour, because we like gather there 1 or 2 weeks before the Pro Tour and start testing. Other way, I draft online on Magic Online. So you basically need to start with stock list, as I said, and then just start Brewing. I am not a fan of brewing. For example, from Vancouver, neither of us came up with Ensoul Artifact, let's say, the Ensoul Artifact deck, because I hate brewing. I really like, there was some guy who had the what's called the enchantment that you, the Doran enchantment, I'm missing the name, 2 mana, and you, the toughness deals damage.
Oh.
Do you got it? There does discard a cost 1 and a green and say every creature deal damage for the toughness.
Yes, yes, I know
okay.
what you're talking about.
And you fill your deck with Yokadox and Nyx Place Ram and Lacona Ball Trailblazer, okay? And this deck had a nice result in testing, but I was so skeptical of it. And I ended up like throwing it away at some point. And I think I would have done the same with the Blue Red Topters if we don't have the perfect deck list, because, you know, it seems like a weaker deck. That's kind of me. I hate brewing, so I'm more for focus deck, great decks, and something like that. But you should brew a little bit if you want to play test for an unknown metagame, an unknown format. Like, for example, for Pro Tour, what's next Pro Tour? Milwaukee. You should, we should brew a little bit because, you know, it's important to understand every possible deck around. But you should focus a lot on the great decks because that's what your opponent is likely to play.
Got it. So make sure you're playing against the big decks.
The big decks. For Vancouver, we played test a lot against Devotion and Abs and Control because we were sure that those decks were part of it.
But then it's also important to maybe, so it's not your strength, but maybe have somebody on the team who is good at brewing and who does like that so they can kind of come up with these new ideas that you can test out.
Yeah, sometimes also playing against the brew is important because if you play the best deck like Abzan against their brew, it's important for them to pass that test.
Right, you know? Absolutely.
And so you're doing your job. Even if you don't like brewing, you just play against the brew and see how it goes.
Right. Somebody always needs to be playing one of the big decks because otherwise, because like you said, that's what people are going to play. So awesome. So to bring things back full circle to the beginners, what do you suggest to people who have a limited budget and they can't afford to draft every day online or construct the most popular deck? How can these entry-level players improve?
Yeah, that's basically the biggest problem of Magic. Of course, you cannot have all the standard decks and always be able to change as soon as the metagame changes with it. For the people that don't want to spend a lot of Magic on Magic because, you know, it's always a game. It's not a job. Like sometimes you need to build a deck and like stick with it, at least like buying what, like for example, my friend bought Abzan. Then the Deathmist Raptor and came out, and he said, "Well, I'm gonna spend like €50 and buy this this Deathmist Raptor. I know it's an investment, but I think that they will be great for my deck." And now it came out Nissan Lang, which I say, "Well, I know that it's still a lot of money, but I still have this deck, and I wanna be competitive with other decks." So of course, Magic, you need to spend money to be competitive, but you can do that choosing your deck that is balanced like Abzan and always be able to change, like now playing Abzan Aghanbrek, now playing Abzan Aggro, now playing Abzan Control.
Okay, that's great advice. Yeah, that's kind of how I got started. I invested in a Jeskai deck and then I just started making, you know, tweaks and whatnot to the Jeskai build because I already had the lands, for example. Now I'm kind of playing like an Abzan thing, but I did start out with just kind of one deck and making changes to it.
Yeah, Jeskai now is great. And as you see with Jace, of course, Jace is a great investment. But if you liked Jeskai before and now Jeskai is great and you should buy the Jace and as a great deck.
Right. Cool. So do you have any Magic-related resources online that you would like to share with our listeners?
Do you mean where I read articles, etc.?
Sure, where do you go to kind of get your information?
All right, so channelfireball.com is the website I write for, and it's a free website, so you can read and watch videos each day, and that's great because they are the best player in the world, and the content is fluent, and etc., and it's free.
Awesome.
And if you would like, also, there's a other website, but yeah, Channel Fireball, I think, is the best.
Great. We'll definitely link up to that in the show notes. And you said that you just recently wrote an article about the mana base for Battle for Zendikar?
Yeah, I just wrote and sent. I don't know if it's still out, but it's going to go out like soon.
Okay, great. Because this interview actually will go live in like the end of October. So that article should definitely be up. Cool.
Okay, great.
So Andrea, as we start to wrap things up, we're all dying to know what your plans for the future are. So what events are you going to? You mentioned GP Madrid, and are you going to go to Pro Tour Milwaukee?
Yeah, GP Madrid, and there's a Pro Tour Milwaukee. So the Pro Tour Milwaukee, I'll be attending the Grand Prix Madison the weekend before.
Okay, great. Great.
And yeah, I'm going to be testing with my team and be there like for the 2 weeks before, so Monday 5th, and then we'll be testing all the week down to the Grand Prix Madison, which is limited. And then we'll fly to Milwaukee and test another week and to the Pro Tour.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, we wish you the best of luck. When this comes out, you would have already done all those events, so I hope you did well. What's the best way to connect with you? And then what's one parting piece of guidance that you can leave with our listeners?
So the best ways to contact me is, I think, Twitter. My Twitter is at Mangu09. That's my Twitter name, or just I think type my name. And I think the last thing that I want to leave is to play Magic, because it's the best game in the world. And you should definitely play and keep playing that.
Sweet. Thank you so much, Andrea, for your time and for sharing your expertise. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I loved having Andrea on, and if you did too, reach out to him on Twitter and say thanks. The show notes for today can be found at mtgprotutor.com/Andrea Mengucci with two C's, M-E-N-G-U-C-C-I, Mengucci. Once again, today is the start of Pro Tour Battle for Zendikar, and I have been loving Battle for Zendikar so far. I've played Standard a few times at my local game store, and I've really liked the impact that it's had so far. I've had a blast opening up packs. I got 4 fat packs so I can get the full art lands, and then I got 1 booster box. And it's been really cool ripping into those. And in fact, last week on Periscope, I was opening up a fat pack live, and I got one of the expeditions. It was super sweet. I got a Prairie Stream in the last booster pack of the last fat pack. It was pretty cool. Normally, Periscope saves the video for 24 hours, but I try to get another app set up to save it permanently. If I can, then I'll probably link that on the website or something like that. Anyway, the only call I have for you guys this week is think of someone you know who's trying to get better at Magic. Somebody who would really enjoy these interviews, and share the show with them. I would love to get the word out to more players and grow the MTG Pro Tutor community so we can all get better as a group and show our support to all these wonderful pros who keep coming on the show and sharing valuable bombs with us. Definitely subscribe to the show so you don't miss an episode, because next week we have Ross Merriam and Joel Larson on. I mean, these guys are amazing. Ross is big in the Star City Games circuit, so we really get to see what that other side of Magic is like. And then Joel Larson is an amazing player who's at the Community Cup. He won a Pro Tour. He's just fantastic. So definitely stick around for that. I'm super excited to share those bombs with you. I'm Sean Penrod, and we'll see you in the next cast.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of MTG Pro Tutor. To get more of the top deck building tips and tricks, head over to mtgprotutor.com and join the mailing list. Make sure you let us know which of your favorite Pro Tour players you'd like to hear on the show so we can help you play like a pro. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on MTG Pro Tutor.